Welcome, everybody. I'm Jared, he's DJ, and this is Number One Bullshit.
So, if you were following the podcast, if you had liked, subscribed on your podcast listening service of choice, you probably woke up this morning like, hey, where's my episode?
Oh, what the frick?
What the frick? Went full mango. If you don't know the reference, go watch Chris Kattan, Saturday Night Live. You're welcome. But we had some technical difficulties with the recording, and we're unable to use the hour for each episode of Total Fire that we did, in fact, have.
Just hot before you go, man.
Yeah, so now we are re-recording. That's why this is coming out a little later. But all the more reason to like, subscribe, follow, because you will be alerted. And also, if you were following us on X at Number One BS Pod, you would have seen that this morning that, hey, you know, don't be worried. Jared and DJ are okay. There was just some technical difficulties, and that's why the episode was not up yet.
Yeah. I'm still going to post the video I took of us recording live because it was so fun. This is nice. A Zoom sesh. But it was fun in person, man. It was good to see you.
Yeah, likewise, man. It had been a while, and so always good. That was the first one that we'd done in person since the very first episode that we recorded, and you guys will never hear it.
Yeah.
Brownies. Trust us, it was good.
It was good. It was the best one.
Yeah, it was really, really good. Also, really, really good. My man Bogdan, old Anthony Smith off, he looked... Whew.
Dude, the guy can take a shot and he can put like and put some power on somebody's chin, dude. It was wild. Now, I honestly thought Ryan Spann was just gonna be too experienced. I just thought it was gonna that moment was gonna come. Mm-hmm. And first round it did, right? But gets him down, controls him, almost gets a submission in the first round. But when they got up, Bogdan was just a little bit more fresh. And when he starts tagging him, dude, even the jabs are insane, man. He's got power.
Yes, and I was a little surprised that Spann appeared as gassed as he did to start round two.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. I mean, he was far larger than Bogdan. Looked like two different weight classes. And Spann has grappling.
Yeah.
He has, was it 12 submission wins on his ledger? Like, I was a little surprised. Generally, you don't see that. Maybe it has to do with Bogdan's strength that is just hard to hold the dude down.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. But once Bogdan started throwing in the second round, first of all, he has a unbelievable chin for somebody who doesn't necessarily look like he would have a chin. He doesn't have the massive like Tito Ortiz head where it's like, oh, this dude can probably take a punch. But I mean, Spann landed a clean straight where like it snapped his head back. Like, I thought he was going out and he just ate it.
Walked through it.
Yes. Yeah. And it showed after that one, he just put his hands down. Like initially he was in they mentioned it on the commentary. Like he was fighting defensively sound, which isn't really his thing. He's like a hands at his waist, even when he's in striking range, which is nuts. But after he ate a clean shot, I was like, oh, okay, I don't respect what's coming back towards me.
He went full Yuri and just said, fuck it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, oh, I'm not concerned about getting put out by this dude, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And the power he carries, the accuracy that he has is just amazing. When he, I mean, not only the shot to drop Spann, but he had like 12 unanswered strikes on the ground. And they all hit clean. A lot of times you see like when guys rush, you know, and they're trying to finish the fight, some are missing, some are hitting the shoulder. Nah.
Yeah.
He said, every single one straight to the face.
He said, I'm going to end this fight now. I'm going to hit you as many times as I can. I mean, great, great win for him. You know, it'll just be fun for me to confuse fans and have him versus Smith going in the future, you know, like if that can happen. We kind of talked about this yesterday with some implications of Smith's next fight. What you think would be comfortable. You know, Smith facing Petrino. If Smith wins, you don't. After a day of thinking about it, you still think Smith shouldn't have to fight Guskov if he wins, but if he loses, it's a good matchup.
Yeah. Because I think if Anthony Smith wins, like the way the UFC has treated their gatekeepers, and once again, no disrespect with that term. I know Anthony Smith doesn't like it. But with those guys that are the tests for the young up-and-comers, is a lot of times if they get a win, if they turn that guy away. So if this week he turns away Vitor Petrino, then he kind of earns the right to not have to fight down again.
Yeah.
And, you know, the UFC does do a really weird thing where if you're unranked and you beat a ranked guy, you just get his ranking instead of like other people moving up and you going to the bottom. The lone exception to that is Max Holloway beating Gaethje, and they're like, we're still going to put you at nine and leave Gaethje at three. So like that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But I think by the time y'all hear this on Tuesday, Bogdan's going to probably be sitting there with Spann's number 11. Petrino's at 15. Smith is at 10. So I think if Smith gets the win, he deserves the right to fight up again, especially just with the guys at 50 fight vet.
Yeah.
Like, let him, you know, give him those opportunities when he turns away guys that you think are your next big thing. Now, if Petrino wins, you could potentially do Bogdan Petrino, but I also think, you know, I'm always hesitant to match up prospects against each other, especially when those prospects are in a division that doesn't have a ton of them.
Yeah, and you know, the light heavyweight, we talk about it almost every week. It needs it, and, you know, if Bogdan's going to keep looking the way he is, it's like, let's match him up. But, I mean, the problem is that light heavyweight, man, any of those guys probably can knock each other out.
Yeah.
You know, it's getting in that territory of like, yeah, Bogdan looks like he has a chin, but can he take one from Roundtree? You know, shout out my boy Roundtree.
We saw him get hurt by Ozdemir. But, you know, let's not forget, no time on the way up. Like, there was a reason he was called there. Right? I mean, he was just running through people. The fight that I would like to see is if Azamat Mirzakhanov ever comes back, and Bogdan versus Mirzakhanov, I think, is a hell of a fight. And Bogdan's just, he has some of that it factor too, in addition to just being an exciting fighter, win or lose. I mean, here's a guy who's dropping F-bombs on broadcast ESPN. And then hits it with the, this not Lionheart, this Bogdan Guskov.
like, nice.
Nice. Yeah. Good for you. I want to watch this guy fight every single week.
Yeah.
He's not, I look at his style. He's never going to be in a boring fight. Just not going to happen. And a fight that was a little more, shall we say, slow paced, I think, than what we anticipated. But still a hell of a fight. Karini Silva, Ariane Da Silva. We're going to fuck it up and say Lipski at least once, I'm sure.
I'm not going to be the first one.
Very conservative estimate. I thought we got all those out yesterday. But, you know, it seemed like people were disappointed with the performance by Karini Silva. But I don't get that. She was fighting up, right? Her first fight against a ranked opponent.
Yeah.
And definitely the biggest test of her career. You look at who she has been fighting. I mean, Marina Moroz is a decent fight. But before that, Ketlin Souza, who we saw on this card, she's a strawweight, you know. And so for Silva to move up rankings-wise and fight somebody as established as Ariane Da Silva, I think is pretty impressive. Especially, we talked about it, Da Silva stopped the last 21 takedown attempts on her.
Yeah.
And the very first one Karini shot for, she got it.
Absolutely. And it was fun to watch because we're fans of Karini. I mean, you got the great article. Go over to Fans
Thank you.
To read it.
Thank you.
But there was that kind of like, you expect her to just like, I don't know, maybe my bias showing and being her fan was like, oh, she's gonna find a way to finish her. And that's okay that she didn't. That's what's supposed to happen in these top 15. Like, don't get me wrong, there's special people out there that stop everybody on their way up and all that stuff. But, you know, not everybody's going to knock everybody out like Poetan did on his way up. You know, not everybody's going to be that. But we got a lot of questions answered. She's not going to give up on herself in 15 minutes. Yeah, she lost the last round. But so, you know, like that's what happens. She has something about her. Kind of DC was talking about how she's like, this is MMA. I don't care who I'm fighting. Like there's no friends when I'm in the octagon. You know, I can be friendly outside. I have a mission. Yeah. And she looked good, man. She just looked good. She looked stronger, and I think she looked stronger and a little bit quicker than Da Silva.
Yeah.
But like it's now you got a top 15 win. It's scary up there, man. It's scary.
It is. And that's why I think it's good to get those rounds.
Yes.
Like if your first round finish everybody, I mean, like we saw it. What happens with a guy like Joe Pyfer who hell of a fighter, but the question was never answered until it was like deep waters.
Correct.
And so when you're you're fighting top 10 fighters, and that's the first time that like you're truly testing your gas tank against good competition. Like that's not what you want. You know, not that Da Silva isn't a great fighter. I mean, she's a top 15 fighter, but you'd rather have your gas tank getting tested against Da Silva and not Thug Rose.
Well, and also if the first time you're going to go the distance, better be a three rounder, you know, like, imagine making your career and then making it to your first five rounder in the UFC. And you're like, now I have to go all five rounds. I don't even know if I can do it. So I loved what we saw from her. I didn't see anything, and I haven't really been looking since the fight. I didn't see any of the disappointment. What are people saying? They just thought she looked bad or something?
I just think people expected her to like run through Da Silva. Like I think a lot of people, I mean, you know how it gets, especially like, and you know, to get Annex back a little bit, like some MMA fans are kind of toxic, and it's
for sure.
I think sports in general, it's the instant overreaction. Like the NFL draft just happened and you have all these people celebrating like they did anything. Like you added to your roster.
Yeah.
You know, like we don't know if any of these guys can play because they have never taken a snap in an NFL game.
Yeah.
You know, but the like excitement. Yeah, we won the draft.
Yeah,
and
but
then,
I get the excitement of it. Yeah.
But it's also like, oh my God, I can't believe we picked so and so. It's like that guy could be an all-pro player for all you know.
Correct.
You know, like we just don't know. And so I think that there's that reactionary thing when it comes to sport, and especially, you know, we see Silva just murking people. I mean, she bullied everybody she fought, and she couldn't bully Ariane. And I think that was a little eye-opening for people. I appreciate that kind of stuff because it shows us something. It's like Sarukyan getting dropped by Joachim Silva. Like, we need to see that.
Yeah.
Because you don't want that first, you don't want to find out in a championship fight. You don't want to find out in a top five fight.
Well, and also, I think if the fight was just like boring, it would be I don't really understand the complaint because the fight was still good. It was a good fight. It was just sometimes you meet your equal or your match or whatever, and you have to figure it out. And I think she did a great job of figuring it out. And she didn't do anything in this fight that made me be like, I don't want to see her next one. I'm more excited to see her next one because now you have no excuses to fight anybody, but that's above you. That's what we want to see. That's what your goal is. Well, now you're there. Good luck.
Yeah. And I love that she talked about that, kind of taking it step by step and not like, oh, I'm ready for the title, but like this is going to be a process and I need to get those challenges. I think moving forward for her, she's 4-0 in the UFC now, 9-fight win streak. Like that's not easy.
Nope.
In this division, right? I mean, it's like putting together a win streak at men's bantamweight. Like it's not an easy thing to do. And, you know, it like you said, it's only tough fights from here. I think, you know, Tracy Cortez going to need a dance partner. That's one that, like, we know how tough Tracy Cortez is based off her last fight against Jazz Davisius. Yep. Like, that was a gritty fight. We know she's going to be there all 15. I think, there's always the Caitlin Cerminara test. And then also Amanda Ribas, because Amanda Ribas is going to be there and you have to mind your P's and Q's for the entirety of the fight because she is never out of a fight. There's enough prospects here. I don't want to see them match her up against the prospect. Let's have Natalia Silva and Karine Silva fight in Brazil you know, yes. a year and a half from now when yes. they're both in the top five. Like, yes. Let's do that. But yeah, I want to see her pass some more like veteran type tests, at least one more. And then maybe after that, it's like, all right, let's see you against a Macy Barber. Or,
well, I doubt the UFC would have them both fight in Brazil each other, right? Because you want the Brazil, and don't get me wrong, that guarantees a Brazilian win. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you're guaranteeing a Brazilian win, but it'd be nicer to see both the Brazilians kick someone else's asses. But yeah, man, Karina Silva, she's exciting. She's fun. She's your fighter to watch for the for that division for the year. There's mm-hmm. a reason, you know. Like she's bad. She's bad.
Yeah, and reason. I want to know the reason that Charlie Arnold had to become the first woman in UFC history to announce in cage. It was really, really weird because Joe Martinez announced Ariane Da Silva and Karina Silva at the start of the fight. Wasn't there to announce the decision. Was not there to announce the Guskov Ryan Spann introductions or the decision, but then comes back in time to announce the main event. And John Gooden, being the polite Englishman that he is, said that Martinez was having some trouble with his throat, losing his voice, I think. But based off what I heard in the announcing of the main event, I think he was in the shitter.
Well, they also said he had a stomach bug.
Today,
someone was like, yeah, he had a stomach bug, which stomach bug equals it's coming out one end or both.
Yes. You know? Yeah,
it's always weird when someone's like, "I'm sick." It's coming out both ends. It's like, well, it always comes out one end, you know, like
simultaneously.
Well, it's just like, yeah, if you're throwing up, that's odd. But poop always comes out always. Yeah. But at the same time, it's rough. Probably had stomach bug. My man was probably in there, you know,
for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a while,
we talk about it. I'm surprised the commentators don't miss out more unless there's like a bedpan around them, but. Yeah, you know, he had
got the catheter hooked up.
That'd be wild. speaking of wild, I underestimated your boy, Alex Perez.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did.
Man, I honestly, Jared, going into that, I was like, God, I just think Nicolau is going to be too much for him. It was real fun to watch the fight because they were so conservative. You know, like Alex Perez didn't come out all hot and heavy like he would. First round, and the second round, it was like they both felt each other's speed power and was like, we're going to be flyweights now, you know?
Yeah.
But fuck, I just, you know, if I miss the fight and you tell me someone got knocked out, I'm like, oh, Perez got knocked out. Dang. Yeah. Nope. Clean.
Yeah.
It was like shoulder, left knockout. It was beautiful.
Yeah. And the way he slumped, you had his girlfriend and fellow fighter, was it Luana Pinedo in the corner, and you could see her like screaming when he went down. Yeah. It looked from the angle they had. I mean, he just slumped. His eyes were open the whole time, so I think his legs just gave out on him. But it looked like he was like,
I mean, he's like ragdoll behind physics. Him, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, they can't be comfortable.
Yeah, it was not good. Was good for Perez though. I was surprised that, like you said, he was a little more reserved around one. We're used to him just coming out and, you know, like bat out of hell meatloaf style. And I was just surprised watching him. Like, oh, he's not throwing any calf kicks. And after we saw what he did to Juicier from Micah's leg, you know, it was like, oh, why isn't this guy throwing calf kicks? But then he started getting that work in the early in round two. And yeah, I was just able to corral him. It was, you know, Nicolau has a tendency to fight. We talked about it last week, you know, not the most eventful fights and then just kind of have these quick bursts. And it's almost like Perez was letting him think this is, yeah, we're going to fight at your pace, and then was just blitzing him at times. And we saw it in the first round with that insane combo to the body. And then we saw it in round two, and ultimately those blitzes were able to get him. It was a hell of a performance by Perez. It's good to see a guy like that, excuse me, who's had some struggles just getting to the fight, right? He was supposed to fight Manel Kopp and had to bow out the night of the fight, like getting ready, you know, 15 minutes before they're supposed to fight type deal. And he's having to pull out of the fight. So really
Joe Martinez bug.
Yeah, exactly.
I cannot get kicked in the stomach, guys.
I need somebody to run in there for me.
Like, this is not going to be good.
Yeah. So, but it was good to see him get the dub, and I liked the post fight you know, the him talking about Cody Garbrandt helping him with his mental, you know, that says a lot, I think, for somebody like that to reach out and be able to get that advice from somebody. And I'm just glad that he was able to fight again so quickly after the Mukhaev fight. It looked like he didn't look slow in this fight
at all.
And he looked a step slower than Mukhaev. You know, was it him just reacclimating to the cage? I find that a little hard to believe with it being, you know, they went the distance.
Yep.
I think maybe Mukhaev is just, you know, 23 years old, stupid athletic. Like, I think that's just it. But I, from what I saw from Perez, he can still compete in this division. And there's some fun ones. Kopp, if he can ever make it, you know, they could rebook that one. Kai Kara France, if Amir Albazi comes back, Brandon Royval, like there's a lot of very intriguing matchups, especially, you know, getting that win over Nicolau.
Yeah. And
because that's not an easy thing to do.
And the weird thing is like, how do you, like, looking at the rankings, Perez is 8, Mukhaev is 7, Kopp is 6, Nicolau is 5. You can't put Perez above, you know what I'm saying? Like, I wonder how the rankings are going to look. Well, you said they come out tomorrow.
Yeah, Tuesdays.
Yeah, so I wonder how the rankings are going to look, because I guess you just maybe move everybody up one, put Nicolau to 8.
I wouldn't be surprised if Mukhaev leapfrogs Kopp and Perez moves up to 7. I wouldn't be surprised if Mukhaev goes to 5, Kopp stays 6, Perez 7, or Perez, you know, Kopp dropping to 7 and Mukhaev and Perez both going up a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it'd just be flat disrespectful to put Perez for Mukhaev, because he literally insane. Just beat him. Insane. Yeah, but these rankings are absurd. So
you're absurd.
Yeah. So, and also relatively absurd, shall we say, was that uppercut from the doctor.
Oh my
god. Uros Medic. Ooh.
Dude. And it's one of those things, you've always said, like, Tim Means has a chin, and after he gets, you know, blasted, he's back up shaking the guy's hand, you know, afterwards. But perfect. We saw 2 uppercuts Saturday night, and this one was filthy. Oh, you actually said that. Filthy.
Yes. Filthy. Yes. When you look at the people that have knocked out Tim Means, Nico Price, who has stupid power.
Yep.
That's the only other guy I'm seeing right here. They have the Tapology has 3 losses by KO, TKO, but they're only showing 2 on here. So that's pretty good company, especially for a guy that's been in there with Bilal Muhammad. He's been in there with Matt Brown. No, he lost to Matt Brown, just didn't get knocked out. Yeah, he's been in there, Masvidal, like a ton of guys. And for Medic to do what he did, I thought that was really, really impressive. Y'all know me, I love a good accurate shot to the ground. Oh, and that you got him good once he hit the ground too.
Real quick, it looks like in September 23rd of 2004, Tim Means got a TKO injury. So I don't think he went out. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think in 2004 he went out. So this dude is just, he's just nasty. And Medic said, fuck all that noise. I'm doing it, and I'm doing it fast.
Yes. And that's how I like it. Yeah. But for him to, yeah, I mean, he needed to rebound from that, the fight against Multipec Orlbay, just because there was a guy coming in on short notice and everyone was like, yeah, you should run through this dude. And you got some good shots on him, but ultimately just got out grappled starting about halfway through round one and took it into, I believe it was round two when the fight finally ended. But you know, he talked afterwards about only training Muay Thai because he was fighting the slugger, not Johnny Parsons, and just didn't train any grappling for that fight. So it was nice to see Medic come back, get the dub. And, you know, it was very interesting, the post-fight in the cage interview where he's talking about, you know, DC's like, hey, man, why aren't you happy? Like, you just got a hell of a knockout. And he's just like, it was hard. Yeah. You know, like, it's not that I'm not happy, but it's, you know, you kind of got that feeling that it was just like a sense of relief of, like, tough camp and just like, ooh, like, I'm glad.
Which has got to be such a good feeling, man.
Oh, yeah. Just, I mean, I know, you know, when you're going through some stuff and you're like worried, fuck, for work, like you're worried about like a presentation or something, and you do it and you're like, whew, I'm glad that weight's off my shoulder, not stepping in to a locked cage in your underwear with a trained killer.
You always say undies, man.
Because when you think about it, well, first of all, the only person that wears the shorts similar to like when we first started watching is my man, Hani Yaya. Mm-hmm. He came in like full board shorts, which is awesome. But yeah, they're wearing like tight shorts. If you wore those shorts anywhere else, people would be like, what are you wearing?
Yeah, fair.
Right? Like if you were going to the gym to work out, or even if like, you know, you're going to the beach or the pool, people be like, oh, where in Europe are you from?
Yeah, for sure. They probably think you're European. Unless you're in some combat sport, like it's very underwear-esque, you know? But,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And let's talk about that Yaya. Oh, dick and balls, Victor Henry fight. Good for Victor Henry, man.
Yeah, that he can still fight and his manhood is not just crushed.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
literally, not like his ego. I'm talking about his actual... Yeah. Twig and berries isn't crushed.
Yeah, testicles.
Yes,
yeah.
No, it was right in the testicles.
The guy's like, nuh-uh.
Yeah, nuh-uh. You lying. But for Victor Henry, and I got nervous because at the end of round one, he was kind of like wincing and touching his cup. Like, no.
No, not again.
They already got righty, not lefty. But it was, I thought Yaya won the first round. I thought he did a very good job with just kind of awkward movement, and you could see Henry was really respecting the possibility of the takedown, and it was leading to him getting tagged a little bit. But man, Henry figured him out in round two and was just piecing him up. I mean, it was...
Oh, wait, and just for the fans, sorry, this is our feature prelim.
Yeah, feature prelim we got going on there. But it was clinical, what he was doing, just picking him apart. And he does a great job, Victor Henry, of rolling with the punches. Like he's not ever really getting hit clean for the amount that he got hit in this fight. When you saw him afterwards, he wasn't marked up at all.
Yeah.
He's a fun, talented guy. I wish he wasn't 36 years old.
Yeah. And especially one judge gave Victor Henry the first round, which, okay, whatever. But two judges gave him the second round 10-8. I didn't even recognize that when we were recording this yesterday. He came out the second round and just found him out. He was just a little bit better, you know, just a little bit on the next level. Victor Henry might not be a championship level, but this is the bantamweight division. This division's insane.
Yes.
You have to be good to even be in the UFC. And he just showed like that he was at that next level and actually got to showcase his talent. And the motherfucker's tough, and he's a bad motherfucker, dude.
Yeah, and there's fun fights for him. You could rebook Basharat. You could have him fight the other Basharat. You could have him fight. I mean, Marcus McGee is the one that, like, you pair those two guys together. Like, yes.
I want to see that because Marcus McGee, I'm ready for his next fight.
Yeah, he's like the Sean Brady or the Kyle Bahalio. Like, you know, whenever somebody needs a fight, I'm like, he should fight Marcus McGee.
For sure.
But there's no shortage of fun matchups at bantamweight and the fact that you have somebody as skilled as Victor Henry, and let's not like play around. Like what he showed, it was not just like a one punch knock a guy out. It was a systematic destruction of a man and a guy that has been in there with the best of the best. And he just picked him apart like that. What a skilled human being. And he's not even sniffing the top 15.
Yeah. And to your point, I mean, Yaya? Is it just
Yaya?
He was at a 49% significant strike landed. Victor Henry was rolling with him. He's making you miss, and he's punishing you for it. That was a fun one. Man, bantamweight is almost always fun. I can't think of the last bantamweight fight, men's bantamweight, that I'm like, oh, man, that was a snoozer.
Yeah, because you have to be.
Yeah, of course.
And you have to be one of the best fighters in the world, regardless of size, just skill for skill.
Yep.
You have to be one of the best fighters in the world to compete at that division.
Correct.
Right? I mean, people talk about how loaded featherweight is. And Aljo just went up there, and I know it wasn't the most exciting fight, but he just absolutely dominated.
Did what he had to do.
A top 10 fighter.
Yeah. And that's the big thing. It's like, yeah, everybody at 300 wanted to see, like, you know, they wanted to see Lemmy Bang Bro moments. And I get it. I don't disagree. If I had to pick one fight that was the least interesting of the night, it was probably the Aljo fight. But he came from 135, previous champion, and then did that. It's like, you guys got to worry about this with him. So what if he makes a boring fight? That's not his responsibility to make things exciting. His responsibility is to win. You did it. He was coming from 135. 135 is so stacked, man.
It's awesome. And I know we'll never say somebody outside of the UFC is the best in the world.
Yeah.
Just because they have not proven it.
Correct.
Yet. But there's a possibility the best 135er in the world isn't even in the UFC with Patchy Mix. Like, there's
shenanigans, dude. Shenanigans.
Ton of talent out there.
Yeah, absolutely. But that doesn't hurt. That's not a dig on Marab or Sanhagen or O'Malley. It seems like that weight division just has, it's like flyweights, you know. Mighty Mouse is to some still considered the like best all around mixed martial artist to ever do it for a reason, you know, and it's okay.
Got to be good everywhere.
Yeah.
Now, a division where you don't have to be good everywhere, heavyweights, and shame on you, DC.
Yeah.
For saying during the Kyle, not even the Janice Austin Lane fight, but during the Machado Dontel Mays fight, saying he loves heavyweights. And I just I have to very respectfully disagree, because that was not an overly fun fight to watch. And I think, unfortunately, like, that's what you get at heavyweight a lot, where they're just, the skill set is so different. Does everybody want to see big one punch knockout like we saw with Janice and Lane? Yeah, that's really cool. Yes. But the idea of like you not being able to get that at the lower weight classes, like, that's not the case anymore.
Yep.
Like, they finished fights.
Perez, I mean, look what Perez just did. You're talking about the heavyweights with the heaviest men's division.
Yes.
And then going down to the lowest men's division, and one of them was a knockout, one of them was tough to watch.
Yeah, it's just the best of the best are always going to be supremely skilled. Tom Aspinall, John Jones, Pavlovich, Gon, Blades, like, those guys are all supremely talented.
Yeah.
But skill for skill, it's not the same at the lower weight classes. And I think and it makes sense, right? Because go take it back to the NFL draft, right? Like, you got guys signing for tens of millions of dollars this past weekend without having to get punched in the face.
Yeah. And kind of talking about the pay structure, they did a side-by-side of bare knuckle. And I think they compared it to maybe the Volk Topuria card. And I think Volk got $700,000 in what's that guy's name? Mike Perry got 600,000.
600.
And then Jorge Masvidal coming out and saying that for the Usman fight, he got paid $5 million, but they sold 1.3 million pay per views. It's like, God, it's so underpaid. So underpaid, yeah. You know. But speaking of going from one heavyweight fight that wasn't that exciting to Austin Lane versus Janice. And
yeah.
Man, Janice just has power.
he's got the Brazilian kickboxing left hook.
Oh,
right? Like, what is it about that with kickboxers?
And the crazy thing is Austin Lane is so huge. Took him down, seemed easy. Seemed like he could have done that all night. But when he got up for that second round, Janice was just a little bit fresher. And the takedowns in the second round were ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they didn't look good at all.
Yeah, it was and that's part of it too, right? Like, the bigger you are, the quicker you're going to gas out, and also you're having to expend more energy because you're holding down bigger people.
Correct. That's right? Fair.
But it's not like Janice was giving a lot back trying to stand up.
Correct.
He was just kind of trying to hold Austin Lane in place. And so I would have, you know, just in my limited grappling experience, that's nowhere near as exhausting as like actively trying to prevent somebody from standing up.
Yeah.
But once Janice let the hands go, man, it's that one touch, put you down type power. And Austin Lane does not respond well to getting hit. He turns his back. I mean, I I get it.
Yeah, like, I understand.
I get it. Yes. But yeah, that was that's the second time we've seen him turn his back after getting hit, and it was ugly. You know, when the final shot landed, he just kind of laid there face down for like a minute. It was scary.
Well, that was the thing, is it's like I didn't think it was one of those, like, you know, Mark Hunt type walk off KOs, you know, where you're just like, mm-hmm. Oh, this person's dead, maybe. Yeah. He was down for so long. Now it could be a combination of like accuracy and the power, and then being tired.
Being exhausted.
But man, Janice can be really fun in the heavyweight, and boy do we need it. But if it's easy to take him down, the thing with Austin Lane, he just can't get that second one. You imagine anybody else getting that second one. Like, I think we referenced the Toffa versus Carl Williamson fight where
he just
couldn't get up. If that happens, then you lose three rounds without being able to do your weapon. He's got to work on that takedown.
Yeah, the good thing is, like, of any division, that's the one with probably the fewest grapplers.
Sure.
So they're going to be able to give him a few more on the way up where he doesn't have to worry.
Correct.
Really about getting taken down, which is good. Like, they need to build people. They need exciting. So, like, put him in there with one of the Toffa brothers. Cool.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. Like, I'll watch that. Yeah. That's the kind but of heavyweight not, fight that
not,
I am
not
into.
Curtis Blades, not Almeida.
Oh God, no! Yeah, I mean, and even a guy like Mick Parkin, like anybody, any of these young guys that's not just an outright brawler that wants to build themselves up is just going to take this guy down.
And I would too. Shit.
Yeah,
I'm not taking the chance. You're not going to hit me with your left hook.
Yeah, with your insane left hook.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm talking about Shyster, freaking old missing weight, Yontop. He paid.
He did.
Yeah. Old Taco Padilla came in and said, I'll take part of your paycheck and the dub.
I'll take your paycheck and your neck, bro.
Yes, exactly. God. And that was a pretty nasty rear naked guy. And it happened after he got hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, he got clipped, and it looked like he was shooting in desperation. And Yontop earlier was able to just kind of stand up and not use technique and do it sloppily and not have to pay for it. And then when he did it the second, I was like, Padilla's like, oh no, like okay, cool, that's what you're gonna do. Like,
I got you
latching it in.
And it's one of those things. It's always fun to watch, like, good striking. Like, watching Anderson Silva back in the day was fun. But it's also fun, and that's just because I'm not a fighter, but it's also fun to watch someone really, like, how quickly Padilla got that rear naked choke. It's like, I'm 36 years old. Sometimes, like, when I roll over in the bed, I'm like, you know, it takes me a couple seconds. The quickness that he got it and the squeeze that he got it. Now, could it be the squeeze, or it's just like, 1 second you're breathing, the next thing you're not, and he has to tap. It was so fast. It was fun to watch, and it just makes you feel good.
Yeah, I don't want to see people. I don't want to be negative. Like, oh, I hate that guy because he didn't make weight. But it's like, hey, like, you're not gonna make weight, and then that happens. Like,
well, you don't have to say you hate people, and I'm not gonna say I hate anybody either. But I'm very vocal. I think we're seeing weight misses every fucking week, at least by one person. Next week, we have a potential weight miss, maybe. You know, like, we have an opportunity for it. Yeah. But it's like, the consequences have to be bigger, because no one's talking about, and I'm going to bring up boxing, no one's talking about Garcia missing weight again, because boxing just needs it. UFC doesn't need it. They need to hit the scales correctly, and I hate seeing people miss weight. So, I don't revel in someone's losses. I don't care about how the fight went because he missed weight. I just wish he wouldn't have missed weight in the first place.
Yeah, especially because, like, he's a guy who showed some real legit skills, you know. And then you have to wonder, you miss weight, were you pairing like you should, and then you lose, and it's like, hey, is that a lack of discipline?
Correct.
Was it an injury? Like, it sucks. It leaves questions, and as a young prospect, you want to, you know, you should be in the business of answering questions, not having more questions come about. And did you see they announced the rules for old Tyson Paul?
Yeah.
Hey, we're just gonna do shorter rounds.
I mean, Tyson's 60, man.
Yeah, Yeah, we're gonna do shorter rounds. We're gonna do bigger gloves. Not as many rounds. And the funniest thing I saw in there was like, and they'll allow knockouts. What do you mean allow?
Yeah, well, because
wait, was he? No, you're not allowed. You're not allowed to pass out.
Well,
stop.
Well, no, like on the, I think for the, what's his brother's name? Logan Paul. Floyd Mayweather was like, you can't knock him out. I think because of the exhibition, but. Here's a reality.
What happens if you hit him and he goes unconscious? What do you mean you can't knock him out?
Well, and I think for the Roy Jones and Mike Tyson, it was like you can't knock him out. I think it was just like
it was like no headshot.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. So like it's a shame because Jake Paul can't crack. You know, like he's going to do elder abuse, or at least his mindset's going to be like, I'm not going to hold back on this guy. I'm going to go out there to kill him. And Mike Tyson's old, so. I don't know. Fuck that fight, dude.
that fight was, and it's not an exhibition, so it's going on. Can you imagine that on Tyson's record, win or lose? Like that on Tyson's record?
Yeah, it's I don't
insane.
I don't get the. I mean, Jake Paul is really, really good at making money, and he's obviously a great businessman. So he's seeing something.
He's a good boxer. Yeah. Like he's,
but I don't
he's
get,
beating guys
outside of money. I don't get this fight because he does talk about. Legacy and wanting to fight Canelo, you're not doing that by fighting MMA guys and Nate Diaz and Tyron Woodley's and Mike Tyson's. Why not fight somebody like your first quote boxer that you fought? You lost, you know, you lost to, and what's his name? Fury,
Tommy Fury.
It's like, why aren't you fighting more of these guys instead of Mike Tyson?
Do you think he's going to fight Fury's dad after?
I mean, I don't fucking know. I don't know where you go from this too, because it's like it doesn't answer any questions. But
yeah, doing makes a lot of money
doing the Netflix deal. I really like Netflix getting into the live sports. That's cool. I just don't need to see this fight. And the problem is, I'll watch it, or at least I'll be aware of it.
Yeah, I mean, if it's gonna be free on Netflix, like with the Netflix subscription, I'll be watching.
Is Netflix doing like a pay per view model where it's like you have a Netflix subscription and you pay extra for the event?
I don't believe so.
Okay, but I'm definitely watching it. Yeah, I mean, then I don't have to like try to find an illegal stream, which I would never do.
Not that we do that.
I would never.
Never. So we did have a pretty full week. Of fight announcements. There is a lot of very, very good ones that got announced, and one that's coming up here in less than 2 weeks, which is insane. The co-main event for UFC St. Louis, which is headlined by Derek Lewis, Rodrigo Nascimento, and I actually wish the co-main was the main. We have Joaquin Buckley, the 11th ranked welterweight, taking on your boy Nursultan Ruzaboyev. Oh, yes, he does normally fight at middleweight. And yes, he's like 6'5", an enormous human being. He has fought at welterweight before, but it has been a while. He was fighting welterweight when he was fighting like 8 times in a month.
Yeah.
You know, on the come up. But crazy fight for Buckley.
And he called it, and he wanted to be on the card, and he got it. And yeah. I agree with you. I wouldn't mind this being the main event, but... being a co-main, I'm just as fine with it. Buckley's exciting, man. Him at welterweight has been fireworks, dude.
Yeah, he's very talented. And now that the work has to be put in to make the weight, it's all coming together.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the thing is, for some guys, the need to cut weight is just a size thing. They're too small to really compete with the other guys. And for other people, it's about like that's where they should be the whole time. And it's a matter of their discipline and being in a position where they are doing the things necessary to be their best version of themselves. And then that leads to the weight cut anyways. And like we've seen it with Kevin Holland, too.
Yes.
Right. Yes, I am from Holland. Isn't that weird? And Nursultan. I mean, great opportunity for him. I wonder if he's going to bounce up back and forth or if he's going to stay at welterweight if he gets the win. Not great when you're going in against a big-time power puncher.
Yep.
And a guy who carries power, not just in the punches, kicks, I mean, everything. And you're taking weight off of an already pretty big frame. I'm interested to see how that affects him. This is going to be a fun one. Did you see Buckley posted a video? He's like sparring with everybody who's like 6'4" or taller in St. Louis.
No, I didn't. That's
hilarious. He's got like eight dudes behind him that are all just tall.
That's what you
got
to do, right?
Yeah, pretty funny. And I love that we are getting more of the road shows too, because you have a fight like that, which is a co-main, which that would easily be a headliner on an Apex card.
Yeah.
And then you go and you look at next month, and we're getting about one road show a month now, which is nice. June 8th, they announced in UFC Louisville, a couple fights added to that one. Dominic Reyes, number 14 light heavyweight, stepping in there with Dustin Jacoby. Ooh, a little scary for Reyes.
Yeah maybe, you know, maybe the time off has like healed his chin, but I don't maybe. Want to test yeah, that's a maybe. I just don't want to test it against Dustin Jacoby.
Yeah, yeah, a like high level kickboxer that can put you to sleep. Now, winner of this fight versus Bogdan as well.
Ooh, okay.
Would be fun.
Let me ask you this though, and we'll talk about this more when it gets closer. Is this it for Reyes if he loses?
Has to be. Yeah. Has to be. I mean, never say has to be, because Tony Ferguson, BJ Penn. But
they're different, those
yeah, those were championship level guys. But Reyes was one contested round away from being the champion.
Champion, though. And that, and
since, I guess Tony won an interim belt.
And since that, but it was also Tony Ferguson. He was the fucking boogeyman. Yep. Like, Reyes was never the boogeyman. Just because he just wasn't. I mean,
yeah, I do think he's done. If he loses this one, he should be, just with how many times he's been shut off. That, I mean, we saw it. Bogdan eats a clean, you know, rear straight, you know, power hand from Span, and just eats it. Reyes eats a jab and goes out.
Yep.
You know, so yeah, I think this will be it for him if he loses. I hope not. He was somebody I really enjoyed watching on his come up. So hopefully we just get a good fight in that one. And they also announced the main event at middleweight. We've been wondering, where the fuck is Jared Cannonier? Well, he's going to be in Louisville June 8th because headlining, taking on Nasruddin Imavov, which is very, shall we say, intriguing fight there. You know, Cannonier obviously coming off that, I can't really actually say coming off because it was so long ago, but that brutal, brutal beating of Marvin Vettori is the first time we thought we were going to see Vettori like actually go out. Still shocked he did not.
Yeah.
But that, you know, it's good to see Cannonier back, especially he's 40 years old, right? Like, this is it for him.
Yes.
He's, I mean, if he gets a win over Imavov here, he has a case, you know, to be like, hey, either you give me Izzy for the next shot, or you give me, you know, winner of Whitaker Chimaev. Like, you just got to give, you're going to, if you're the UFC, if Cannonier goes out there and puts on a performance like he did against Vettori, which is, you know, the footwork of Imavov is a totally different animal. Mm-hmm. But if he goes out there and puts on a performance like that, you know, you probably have one or two more good fights in this guy just based on age.
Oh, great.
So like, let's go, let's maximize that. But really excited to see him back in there. And the same goes for Imavov, because, you know, what he just did against Dalidze, very impressive, was looking good against Chris Curtis. I mean, other than when he really got bullied by Sean Strickland, I know he lost to Phil Hawes too, but other when he kind of got bullied by Strickland, he's looked really good.
Yeah.
And he kind of has it all. It can grapple, the karate kick heavy style. Like, he's a fun one, and I just don't think we see him enough. And so this is going to be a big one for him. If he can make a statement against a guy like Cannonier, that's huge.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah. Good luck. Yeah. Absolutely. Good luck. And then July 13th, another fight night. They haven't announced where this one is yet. Based off what we're seeing here, might be an Apex card, but who knows? And they have also not announced a headliner, but they did announce two welterweight fights. And it's very, very interesting, because both two fighters, a fighter in each one of these fights, is coming off of being exposed moment.
Oh, yes.
Of getting their first chance against a higher level guy and it not going well for them. And the first one we'll talk about, Gabriel Bonfim making his return after, and I don't like to say people get broke, but getting broke by Nicholas Dalby.
It seemed like a vet that was like, dude, you can't stop me. And I'm here for the shit. I'm here for 15 minutes. And it's it to kind of expand on what you just said, both of these guys got exposed in two different ways. And Bonfim mm-hmm. got it in a beat the shit out of you way. It was tough to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not an easy comeback fight against Angelosa. He's been in the cage recently with the eye poke, no contest against old short hair Pooh Bear.
Yeah.
Can't wait for him to get back in there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so Bonfim, but I'm excited to see Bonfim because when he was before that Dalby fight, it was like, holy shit, this guy is for real. And so, you know, anytime you see a guy lose like that, it's like, all right, that next fight, we're going to learn.
Correct.
Who is this dude?
Correct.
And so very, very excited for that. And then the other one, old proper Mike Malott
yes.
coming back. And, you know, he was winning the fight. Was winning the fight and then just totally gassed out in round three, losing with 15 seconds left. And if he holds on for 15 seconds, worst case scenario, it's draw.
Yep. And
yeah.
Magny said, I'm the test and you just couldn't pass me. Mm-hmm. Malott has something about him, that star power, or that star quality potential.
Yes.
And if you're going to put yourself up and look in the mirror, that no Magny's the guy that's going to make you do it. And he did.
Yes.
Yeah, but yeah. Fun to see him back.
Yeah, and he's getting a little bit different of a matchup, taking on Gilbert Urbina.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Urbina, but this is one where I think they know, by they I mean the UFC knows what they have in Mike Malott. You know, putting him on the main card of pay-per-views in Canada and seeing the reaction he gets.
Yeah.
I think they wanna make sure that they can build him back up. Now obviously it's a fight, and so you can very easily lose, but I think their plan is to try to build him back up so they can have that Canadian star again.
I'm at it.
Yeah. And then we have a couple pay-per-view announcements. UFC 302 on June 1st, the one being headlined by Islam and Poirier. Fluffy Hernandez was supposed to be fighting Roman Dolidze. He tore a ligament in his hand.
Bummer.
So he is out. Yeah, that sucks because I was juiced to see him back in there. He's just a fun one. And then also because of an injury, Tim Elliott was supposed to be fighting Tatsuro Taira, the great Japanese hope, on May 18th, a fight night card that's being headlined by Edson Barboza and Lerone Murphy. But Elliott got hurt. He's out of that fight. And they have rebooked Taira to 302. And he's taking on Josh Van, those are like the two flyweight prospects that I'm like, yes, I want to watch both these guys. And I hate that they are fighting each other this early in their careers.
I know you do. And I get it. I'm on board with you. But sometimes I just want to see it. And this one's going to be so fun. Especially this is probably going to be undercard fight. Not like a feature prelim, and I'm gonna be so stoked to watch this. It's gonna be free. This matchup is free, man.
Free.
It's gonna be great.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I love the matchup. I love the actual fight. I just hate that it's happening in 2024, not like 2027.
Yeah, 2026.
I mean, these guys are that
awesome.
Young.
Yeah.
That I mean, Tyra's the older one. He's 24.
Yeah, which is like, stupid.
Yeah, these two guys are both so far away from their primes that it's wild. And so I just, you know, and who knows, maybe it's a great fight and then they meet again 4 years down the road and it's awesome. But true clash of styles here. I mean, Van is somebody who talked about not even really grappling till a few years ago, has beautiful boxing, works the body, you know, throws a great liver shot, and Tyra is just a hell of a wrestler.
Yep.
And so I'm hoping that for Tyra's sake, that he did not fall in love with his hands in the after putting out Carlos Hernandez, and now is like, cool, I'm going to prove something. I like boxing because it's less taxing on the cardio than grappling. I want to see the best version of both of these guys with both of them trying to implement their game plans.
Yeah, I think we will.
Who's the better man kind of deal? Because that's one where if I am writing articles for UFC 302, if I'm writing one about a matchup, that's the one.
Easy.
Yeah. And then UFC 303, headlined by new Bare Knuckle FC co-owner Conor McGregor.
Nice.
Taking on Michael Chandler June 29th. That's right. We have two pay-per-views in the month of June, which is
tight.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So we will have that one. And on that card, they announced at bantamweight, number 15, Ricky Simone coming back, taking on Loke Dog of Vinicius Oliveira. And that's just just going to be fun. You have to imagine. I know what I'm looking for. Ricky Simon wrestles. Oliveira throws crazy flying knees. So that's usually a fun recipe to see something cool.
That's a
pump for that one.
Good fight.
Yeah, it's bantamweight.
Yeah, of course.
It's bantamweight, right? We might now have another passing of the guard where you could potentially have another prospect in the top 15 and another guy as supremely talented as Ricky Simon, who's not even in the top 15.
Which is just stupid. Bantamweight.
Fucking wild. Yeah. And going from men's bantamweight to women's bantamweight, they did add a top 10 fight to that card as well. We have the return of Mayra Bueno Silva. Very interested to see what that return looks like. And she's taking on Macy Shazon, number 7.
And I'm really interested to see this matchup, not only just because Bueno Silva's title shot was so lackluster. Yeah. Macy Shazon, her last fight, we talked about her mentality on it. She's just like, I'm different. But also you have some new superstar in that division where everybody now has to fight like for spotlight. So really that now we'll see what this division looks like when some of that pressure of like, I'm always going to get jumped. And then you also have the potential of Amanda Nunes being like, I can come back, guys. And if Amanda Nunes comes back, no one else matters, unfortunately, except for who holds the belt. So you gotta show your ass.
Who holds the belt? And if Kayla doesn't hold the belt, Kayla too.
And I'm so sorry. I didn't say who the person was. Kayla Harrison being the potential superstar. Yeah. Like all these people are going to be like, she's going to leapfrog us just because she's special. And then Amanda Nunes can come back and leapfrog everybody because she is the most special. I got to show my ass. So I think these two women have it in them. It's just you have to show it.
Yeah, and it's that much more motivating though, right?
Correct.
Because this was a division that when Amanda Nunes retired, and even before she retired, right? It was like, okay, what do we have going on here? And
you had Juliana Pena that was convincing people she was a bad motherfucker. And you're like, okay, that's fun. That's fun.
Yes. Yeah. Aside from that, you know, it was kind of like, hey, if I can string together 3 wins, like I deserve a title shot.
Correct.
Whereas now with Kayla Harrison coming in, you better be motivated to put on a show.
Correct.
Because if you go out there and you 30-27 this fight and it's not just like an ass kicking and we're talking about how tough the loser is.
Yeah.
then like Kayla Harrison, like, hey, cool. Step aside.
Well, especially because we've heard both of these women on the microphones and they don't got it like Kayla Harrison does. So even if you do go out there and shine, you also have to have the extra thing because sometimes the loudest mouth is the one that gets fed, you know? So, I mean, ready to see the fight. Hopefully the women's bantamweight is, hopefully this is the trend now that we'll start seeing exciting fights in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And we talked about the rebound fights for Gabriel Bonfim and proper Mike Malott. Well, we have another one with my man, Body Bags. Old Joe Pyfer coming back after getting exposed against Jack Hermanson, where, you know, Pyfer was winning early. Hermanson ate the shots and Pyfer wore down over time.
Yep.
And that was, now he has an opportunity to kind of get some of the hype back. And I don't mean hype in like a negative, unfounded way, but just get people back on his side, right? Because he was talking a big game. He was executing, right? He was walking the walk.
He did Joe Rogan. I mean, he had the marketing going. He punched that thing harder than Francis, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he had that. And then people saw him just get exhausted, right? He didn't break mentally. He just got beat by a better person that night.
And the good thing is we saw him have to dig deep for 5 rounds for the first time, and he did it. There's nothing wrong with someone being better than you. It's just, like we said earlier in this episode, what do you learn?
Yeah, because sometimes that's what it takes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you think, I got it. I'm the best in the world. Yep. And then you get in there with somebody, and it's like, okay, the level's different.
Yep.
It's like being your smartest kid in your class, right? And you're like, oh yeah, I'm super smart. And then you get in there with other smart people. And you're like, oh, like I'm there's like
dumb.
Yeah, like there's levels to this. Yeah. And I either gonna have to like be okay with being average or step my game up.
Correct.
And that's where we're at with Body Bag. And the guy he's fighting in Marc-Andre Barrio, not a slouch. I mean, despite the kind of underwhelming performance against Chris Curtis, Barrio is somebody that's going to bring the pressure. And if I'm old power bar and I just saw Pfeiffer get worn out, you know, I'm thinking, hey, I'm just going to pressure this guy. I'm going to try to eat his best shots for the first five. And after that, it is foot on the gas and we're going to make him tired.
Yep.
And so it should be an interesting matchup. This is going to tell us what we need to know about Joe Pfeiffer at this point in his career.
Correct. Right.
You thought you were the man, you might still be the man, but there was somebody who was better than you on that night. How do you handle that? And that's one of the really fun parts about this sport. We talk about the come up all the time. It's also really fun to see how people respond.
Yeah.
Because as cool as it is to see Khamzat, it's also really, really cool to see Robbie Lawler.
100%.
Anything else on your end?
No, sir.
All right. As always, fight friends, appreciate y'all for listening. Love and respect.
Later.